The content is the protected, copyrighted property of the Murthy Law Firm. Please listen to copyright information and restrictions at the end of this recording.
Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us for today's discussion about the recent adjustment of status / 485 memo and its potential impact on you, whether you're an employer, an employee, a family member, etc. Joining me for today's discussion are two of my esteemed colleagues at the Murthy Law Firm, attorney Aaron Finkelstein, who's been with the firm, as we joke, only about 27 or 28 years, Chris Drynan, who's catching up pretty close, I forget whether it's 15, 16 years. We're truly honored to have these extremely seasoned and highly experienced, brilliant lawyers discuss and maybe analyze a little bit to give you all an idea of what's involved. Right, the memo was passed on May 21st, 2026, recent enough, but we were waiting a few weeks, just to make sure to see what was happening on the ground, to understand what these different things mean, what is the legal framework, how does discretion work, what does totality of circumstances mean, and who may be impacted. So with that, I'm going to invite Aaron to jump in and talk about what he's seeing as an overview with respect to these adjustment cases. Aaron.
Thank you, Sheila. There are two ways to obtain a green card. A person can apply abroad for an immigrant visa at a U.S. consulate, known as consular processing, or alternatively, a person already present in the United States who's the beneficiary of an approved petition may file for adjustment of status with the USCIS and obtain a green card without even leaving the country. Congress created adjustment of status in 1952, and for more than 70 years, it's been the ordinary path for people already in the United States. And since fiscal year 2016, probably more than 500,000 people each year are using it in order to obtain their green cards.
Thank you, Aaron. So as you can see from this, that lots of people have used it successfully, and we hope that that will continue. But maybe Chris, you can jump in and tell us, what does this new memo, what does it do and what does it not do, and how can people plan?
Thank you, Sheila. This memo did not change the basic eligibility rules for adjustment of status. A person who qualified to adjust status before the memo still qualifies now. What changed is what you can refer to as the discretionary layer sitting on top of the legal eligibility layer. I mean, basically, according to this memo, officers are being told that satisfying all of the legal requirements for adjustment are not, by in and of themselves, sufficient for approval of the case. And the memo basically recharacterizes adjustment of status as a form of extraordinary relief that permits applicants to dispense with the ordinary consular, what they're calling the ordinary consular processing system. The memo directs officers to treat the consular processing route sort of as the default, and that adjustment of status is an exception to the normal rules. Then applicant has to affirmatively earn and apply for and demonstrate their eligibility for. And this reframing is very concerning for a lot of people. Lots of individuals here have firmly settled in the U.S. I mean, if you're a person who's applied for adjustment of status and you're born in India or China, you have a priority date wait that could be decades sometimes. You've been here, you've been working here, you bought a house, your kids are in school here. It would be very difficult for someone in that situation to uproot their entire life and pursue consular processing. It might effectively, for some people, be impossible. And this memo also contradicts the USCIS's own policy manual, which you can look up online. It's publicly available, which describes adjustment as a generally available alternative path and basically said there is no favored route here. You can consular process or you can adjust status. There's no preference one way or the other.
Thank you, Chris. So as both Aaron and Chris have just explained, right, so these are co-equal statutory pathways, adjustment of status and consular processing, or AOS and CP, are both co-equal pathways to file and obtain lawful permanent residence or to become green card holders. And under the statute and the regulations, neither one is actually preferred over the other as a matter of law. each of them rests on its own statutory foundation. So, for example, you have consular processing, which relies on the Immigration and Nationality Act or the INA sections 221 and 222, while the adjustment of status relies under section INA section 245, right? 245. And Congress has repeatedly increased or widened the adjustment door rather than narrowing it as this memo attempts to do, which shows that it regards both of these routes as co-equal. And so, for example, Congress eliminated the maintenance of status requirements with respect to immediate relatives in the family-based cases. They added a clause about the inspected and admitted or a person who has been paroled into the U.S. based on advanced parole, et cetera, right? There was also, for those who remember from back in the day, Section 245I, for those who literally before 2001 had entered the U.S. and had some type of a green card or priority date to show that they had a case being processed. And, of course, you have Section 245K, which still exists under law, to forgive those who have violated status for up to 180 days in employment-based cases. So all of these continue to exist, which shows that the adjustment of status is absolutely a viable and valid option. But then they talk about this role of discretion. So, Aaron, what do they mean by this discretionary factors for AOS?
Well, I'm going to go in and explain discretion a little bit, but I want to start with the premise that discretion does not mean arbitrary. And I think as we start getting into it, we'll see that it's not arbitrary, though the officer does have the ability to make a final decision. So as it relates to discretion, adjustment of status has always been a discretionary relief. An adjustment decision proceeds in two ways. First, it's eligibility, whether the applicant is statutorily or regulatory eligible. This means that the applicant has applied, is admissible, is eligible to receive an immigrant visa, a green card, and has a visa immediately available to be given over to them. The second point is discretion. Discretion is whether the applicant warrants a favorable exercise of discretion, whether they warrant a favorable decision. The statute frames the structure this way by providing that that status may be adjusted in the discretion of the adjudicating authority once the prerequisites are met. The standard of proof that they're supposed to use in making this decision is called the preponderance of the evidence. And preponderance of the evidence means more likely than not, or 51% likely, in order to make a positive decision on the case.
Thank you, Aaron. And so, Chris, what about, there's one, they talk about the discretion, and then they talk about the totality of circumstances analysis. What does that mean for somebody trying to figure out, hey, should I do this? Should I do AOS, or should I go for CP?
Well, if we're talking about the totality of the circumstances analysis, that's a very common thing in immigration law. Lots of different types of applications apply a totality of the circumstances test. Essentially, it's a balancing test. You're looking at a person, you're looking at their application, and you're weighing all the relevant evidence about this person. What we, in lawyer speak, we talk about the positive equities and the negative equities. In other words, what are the good things about this person? What are the potentially bad things about this person? What are good things about the case? What are bad things about the case? And you weigh these all together, and you're essentially looking what side does the scale end up on? I mean, does the balance of the equities end up on the good side as opposed to the bad side? And as I said, lots of immigration applications do the exact same thing. This is not unheard of. This is very, very common in immigration law. Now, one of the positive equities, the good things, are threshold eligibility for adjustment of status. In other words, if you're legally eligible to adjust status, that's a positive factor that should, in other words, it's a finger on the scale. You're starting off with a positive equity. Just the fact that you're preliminarily eligible to adjust status. Now, the positive side of the scale here is governed by a list that's in the USCIS policy manual, and it's not exhaustive, which means this is not everything that can be considered. This is just basically a guide. And it's things like family and community ties, the closeness of the underlying relationships, in other words, how close are you to family in the U.S., hardship that a denial of adjustment would cause if you had to go back to your home country to consular process, how long you've been here, how faithfully you've complied with immigration laws in general, property ownership, investments in the United States, your employment history. Is it steady? Is it steady employment history or is it spotty? The amount of your education, whether you have specialized skills that could benefit the United States, your good moral character. In other words, have you had problems with the police? Have you paid your taxes? All of sort of the and your involvement, your contributions to the community. Do you do volunteer work? I mean, do you contribute to the community as a whole? These are all positive things that are on the good side of the scale. There's also a negative side. If you've had contact with the police, criminal matters. If you've violated your status, your immigration status in some way. If you've had prior instances of fraud or misrepresentation to the government. Or if you've done things that are inconsistent with your immigration status, or potentially failure to depart when departure was expected. If you came as a visitor and you failed to depart, arguably that could be considered a negative factor. It's a bit more complicated than that, but that is potentially a negative factor that an officer can consider. Now, ultimately, the USCIS policy manual and a bunch of decisions from the Board of Immigration Appeals indicate that absent substantial negative factors, USCIS should normally exercise discretion in a positive way. In other words, unless you have some really negative stuff on the negative side of the scale, generally USCIS should approve these applications. And that's been longstanding law, both from the policy manual and from actual decisions from the Board of Immigration Appeals. So this is longstanding guidance from the government.
Thank you, Chris. So I guess if you try to truly understand everything that we've been discussing, right, who is and who is potentially impacted and affected and how. So the policy reaches people who are adjusting under this discretionary portion that Chris just went over, right? But then you have Section 245A. These are people who, at least in theory, could obtain the immigrant visa from abroad, and it includes immediate relatives of U.S. citizens, family preference cases, which is family-based immigration, employment immigration, diversity visa people, certain special immigrants such as religious workers, and those who are adjusting after temporary protected status designation or certain grounds of parole. And USCIS has said that applicants whose cases provide an economic benefit or whose what I think Chris referred to, otherwise in the national interest of the United States, will be given more favorable discretion. But really, at this point, because it's only been a few weeks since the memo has been released, we don't know what they mean and if they're planning to change it. But as far as we are seeing, there hasn't been a major change in terms of approval for adjustment of status cases. But then certain categories likely fall outside of this policy because an adjustment for them is really non-discretionary. And this includes refugees who adjust under Section 209 of the INA, as well as certain adjustments under what they call NACARA, right? And under the Haitian and Liberian Refugee Fairness Acts. Obviously, that's a lot more stuff that we're not going to be able to get into right now, but those are very, very limited areas. And potentially affected individuals who would need to demonstrate how consular processing is not a feasible option based on their circumstances. So that's a quick overview. Now let's look at the post-memo impact, any field observations, case examples, field interview materials, anything that we can jump in. So Aaron, I'll have you jump in, and maybe Chris, you can jump in too afterwards. But Aaron?
Sure. Well, to start with, remember this memo, this policy memo came out May 21st. And we're sitting now somewhere in July 6th, July 7th, in this July timeframe. So we're looking at something that's about 6 weeks later. So where will it be in 6 months? It's anybody's guess. But I can tell you that initially, when the memo came out, it seemed like USCIS officers were really trying to apply the memo. And they were looking for different lines of questioning at interviews and trying to quantify exactly what it meant and how far they should push it and where they were going with it. But about a week later, the USCIS reportedly limited the scope of the memo by stating that it only restated longstanding law and policy and that the policy won't prevent any individual from being able to obtain a green card who legitimately and properly qualified, and that only some individuals who didn't merit the discretionary benefit ultimately applying with the Department of State overseas rather than the USCIS in the United States. DHS also said that the policy will have no noticeable impact on highly qualified applicants and skilled professionals who followed the law. But since then there's been very little noticeable change in adjustment of status adjudications, at least as far as I've seen and from the interviews I've gone to. Now, Chris, I know that you go to a lot of interviews also. Have you had any different observations or any specific instances you'd like to share?
I have not. I mean, since this memo came out, I've been to about half a dozen interviews, and this was not inquired about or raised in any of those interviews. And these were both family-based and employment-based. It did not come up.
So for those who are saying, you know what, I've heard what you guys have said, I understand positive, negative, I understand, where do I stand? What does that mean for me? Can I apply? Can I file? So as far as what we're telling and what our position on this is, and I think that's what Aaron and Chris and I, all of us are saying is, it absolutely, adjustment of status is absolutely still an option, can and should be pursued. Obviously, depending on the circumstances for the individual, it may be advisable in some cases to prepare what we refer to at the Moosey Law Firm as an affirmative discretionary package up front, which will include proof, for example, of a person's family ties, how long they've been living in the U.S., their employment history, tax history, community organizations they're actively involved with, and basically to establish what we call GMC, or good moral character. To try to conclude this and wrap this up, as we try to do it in about 20 minutes, is it's still unclear what the impacts of this memo will be if they're going to pursue, but what we're seeing for the last several weeks is that we think adjustment is still very much a viable option. Obviously, you want to talk to your attorney, and if you're working with a multi-law firm, we have a whole team, and we look at everything, and we are proactively submitting memos for those who are requesting it or asking for this additional memo as part of their adjustment application because it's based on a change in policy, right? And for now, we believe it's absolutely viable, and the best approach is to continue to stay informed, read the latest changes and developments that we post on Moosey.com in the Moosey bulletins, Moosey forum, Moosey articles, Moosey webinars like this, and different ways to continue to keep yourself apprised of the latest changes. So clearly, the Moosey Law Firm will continue to monitor this issue, will continue to share updates with you. And on behalf of Aaron Finkelstein, Chris Dryman, myself, Sheila Moosey, and our entire Moosey Law Firm team, thank you so much for making time, and we look forward to continuing to help you. Have a good afternoon.
Unauthorized recording or dissemination of these materials without prior permission is prohibited by law. Learn about our firm, how to engage our services, and more at www.moorthy.com.